Florida State versus Duke. Can the Noles go on the road to Durham and take down the Blue Devils to maintain their perfect record against Duke? I don't know, Michael. This one makes you feel nervous. That streak could be in jeopardy this week, but that's what we're here to talk about, to preview this Florida State-Duke matchup. Thank you so much for tuning in, Nole Nation. I'm Jesse. That's Michael from Plant the Spear, and we're excited to talk about this game. We've been on a bye week. Maybe that was a good thing for us to get a week off from this. There were some really good games on Saturday, man. This was a really, really fun Saturday of college football. But we're ready to get back at it, man. I'm ready for Florida State to get back on the field and play. And I actually like our chances in this game. So we're going to get into that here in just 1 second. But before we do that, Michael, how are you, my friend? And thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Jesse. Yeah, I'm doing great. Yeah, it was, you know, it was nice to not have to be stressed and ultimately ticked off at the end of a Saturday night,
right?
Because Florida State had lost. It was kind of nice to watch, just to be able to watch the games and enjoy it. But I will tell you, Jesse, if I'm being honest, there were many times throughout Saturday where I kept, you know, watching a team, whether it was Alabama, South Carolina, whether it was Georgia and Mississippi State, whether it was Oklahoma and Texas, which was a blowout, whether it was any of those games, Oregon, Ohio State, those good games. I kept thinking, gosh, if Florida State was on the field with them right now, this would be a 60 burger. This would be, yeah. This would be a blowout. Like, what, you know, like, even though there was a bye week, yeah. I couldn't help it but to think about what was Florida State was playing this team right now. And so it was enjoyable, but then it wasn't. But glad we're back. We got a game on Friday against the Dukies. And yeah, trying to keep that streak alive.
Well, thankfully, we're playing Duke this week and not Ohio State or Oregon or Texas.
That's right. So
we got a chance in this one. But yeah, man, like you said, Friday night, a non-Saturday game for Florida State. But I like it because it's going to be nighttime.
Yeah.
You know, actually, the crazy thing, man, I was looking it up. And for those of you watching, if you're on YouTube or the podcast, I am going to this game. I am officially got it in the books. I will be there. So if you're there and you do see me, I am sitting in section 2. That's where I saw the away section was. And then I'm going to try for the circuit lot. These are some nerds up here, Michael. We're going to get, we might lose to some nerds, the science drive or whatever. Like I'm going to try and park in the circuit lot. So if you're going, look that up. That's where I'm going to attempt. I don't know. Parking is free up there. Like, what's that like, man? That's pretty small time college football, man. 2 tickets for less than $100 and free parking. You can't beat it. So I figure why the heck not go. So if you're going to be there, make sure you try and see me and say hey. And it's also going to be another reason I wanted to go. It's going to be in the 40s. So that is okay. Going to be an awesome weather game. It's going to be a hoodie game, a long sleeve game. So I'm looking forward to the weather there as well. Hopefully Florida State gets ready for the weather too. I mean, we already have a hard enough time catching the ball in the warm weather. The cold weather might make that even more difficult, but you never know. Maybe cold weather is the key. Maybe we're really trying to show people that we're actually a Big Ten team and we're looking forward to playing in the cold weather. So yeah, looking forward to this one on Friday night. Again, if you're going to be there, drop it in the comments or something. Let me know so we can hopefully meet up with some of you guys, because I would really love that. So I'm looking forward to it, man. But before we jump into the Duke preview, I do want to touch on something today, that Florida State gets a commitment for Tribe 25, 3-star offensive lineman Daniel Pierre-Louis. Again, man, you know, 3 stars, maybe not what we want to hear, but at the same time, like, you need, this is a position of need. So you need to throw bodies at it.
Yeah.
And so Florida State gets a commitment, a South Florida kid, 3-star offensive line. I do like the size here, 6'5", 290 pounds. I like the size there. Number 63 interior offensive line in the 2025 class. Just a little bump for Tribe 25. You go up to 32nd, 5th in the ACC. Again, that's still not good enough, but you're getting some bodies at a position of need. Now, the big question is Alex Atkins, this is kind of looking like with this offensive line class, they're probably going to keep Alex Atkins around. That makes you a little nervous because that's a position that we both thought they needed to make a change there. We've had that discussion 100 times, so we're not really going to get into that again. But, you know, with that being said, man, this is a pretty nice offensive line class. You have 5-star Solomon Thomas, 4-star Peyton Joseph, 4-star Mario Nash Jr., and then 3-star Daniel Pierre-Louis. So if you can keep them all committed, this is a pretty nice class. Now, I mean, Alex Atkins has, again, like I said, we're not going to go deep into this, but he's not really shown the ability to develop. But we've also talked about a lot of the high school recruits that he signed so far really haven't went anywhere and done anything else. So correct. Maybe it's just actually getting a good crop of guys in here. I don't know. I still think they should make a change. But Florida State gets a commitment on the offensive line, 3-star offensive lineman Daniel Pierre-Louis.
Yeah, I mean, this is a, you know, a pickup, and kudos to them for keep on recruiting. You know, again, Jesse, I hate to be sound like a broken record, but part of me is like, I thought we were at the days that we didn't need bodies, right? I thought we were at the days where we could like actually go and recruit the offensive line of the future, where we could like handpick like that five star, that four star, that yep. really, 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 really high three star that no one's discovered yet. And maybe Daniel is that. Maybe Daniel is a high three star that no one's really discovered yet. You know, like I said, like you said, I like his size, 6'4", 290. You know, he's currently right now, I think, projected to be a guard somewhere in the guard center area. And so maybe this is a talent that like that Atkins and them are jumping on early, and this guy might continue to blow up in the rankings or whatever. Now, and the rankings aren't everything, but again, are we just throwing bodies at the problem, or do we need to look at, like, we're not going to relitigate this again, but do we need to look at the coaching? Because really that seems like the problem, but who knows?
Yeah. But I will say the good thing here too is, again, you get a guy who commits to you in the midst of a dumpster fire season. Right. The same thing with Mario Nash Jr. So hopefully, I know kids out of Mississippi are hard to pull, but you know, if they're committing to us at 1-5, you feel like they're along for the ride. Yeah. The other good thing is he chose you over NC State and in-state rival Florida. So you beat Billy out for a recruit there. So that's good too. So not only do you get him, but you keep him away from your rival. So, you know, Florida State still, again, got to recruit better. But, you know, one thing we've seen from Alex Atkins, the man, he can recruit. We just need you to actually start doing something with the recruits.
Correct.
So, but you know what, Michael, you know who you never have to worry about falling short on their promises here. And that's Alumni Hall FSU.
Oh, come on.
If you need some FSU gear, and look, I just said it's going to be 40 something degrees at this game. That cold weather's coming, so it's time to get some cold weather gear, and Alumni Hall is a great place to do that. They just got in a new batch of hoodies I saw online the other day, so head on over to alumnihall.com, navigate over to the FSU page, and check them out. If you're coming up from Florida for this game, 1415 Timberlane Road in Tallahassee, you might want to stop by and grab you some cold weather gear before you get up here. Make sure to save 10% by using code SPEAR online or in-store. We appreciate those guys for supporting us, and we appreciate you guys for supporting the ones that support us. They've been with us for a few years. They're a great sponsor, and they got great gear, man. They're easy to promote because they got awesome stuff. Everything that I'm bringing to that game on Friday is going to be from Alumni Hall. So I love what they got there. My hat and my shirt that I'm wearing in the show are from Alumni Hall. So it's like the Hair Club for men. Not only am I the president, but I'm a member too. But let's get into.
Let me correct something real quick. Actually, they're looking at him as tackle, not okay. in the interior guard.
Well,
so looking
well,
at
you
tackle.
Know, 6'5". 290. He's got the length. He looks like he's pretty, you know, got long arms too as well. So he's got the size to be a tackle. You know, at least maybe a rotational piece, if nothing else, give you some depth there. But let's get into this Florida State Duke matchup. And before we do that, we're going to start with, it's related to this, but it's the depth chart changes that we saw this week. Florida State has been riding the momentum of some youth players, some younger players. And it looks like they're continuing to kind of do that this week as well, kind of working more in. I thought that was maybe something that we would see after the bye week. You know, I said like a few weeks ago that I thought after the Clemson game, if you came out of that Clemson game like 1-5 or 0-6, I thought that's when you should really go full on youth movement. And they're not full on youth movement, but they are starting to work a lot of these guys in. Really, the notable changes, obviously, Brock Glenn is still your starter quarterback. DJ's no longer on the roster. Well, not on the roster, but not on the depth chart because that might be better than not. But, no longer on the depth chart right now. Obviously, that's not a surprise there. But the notable changes are LaWayne McCoy is now listed as a co-starter with Malik Benson and Jaylen Brown. Now, he's not really played this season, but he's a guy that when you watch him in practice, I'm really excited to see him get an opportunity because he can really make some guys miss. He's got really good speed, so I'm really excited to see that. You know, I don't know how much he's going to play being the co-starter there because I still think Malik Benson's a guy that's playing pretty good. But I do think this means you're at least going to see him on the field at some point in the game. Also at wide receiver, there is no more or by Hakeem Williams anymore. Fortier is now his straight up backup along with Elijah Moore. So I think that that's good for two things. I think Hakeem is really, he looked good against Clemson. You know, he's made some tough catches and I think he's really starting to come on. Fortier, you know, we said this before. I don't think him and Darian Williamson didn't really need to see them anymore this season. Just so inconsistent. So I do like that you see Elijah Moore there too. I don't know how much he's going to play, but the opportunity for him to start getting on the field and getting some reps is exciting there as well. To finish off the offensive side here, you do see Andre Otto and Jalen Early are your starting guards. So those are two young guys there. We were talking about this before the show. You know, this offensive line, this is a game you're going to need them to step up against Duke. But Andre Otto, that was his first start against Clemson, and he didn't do terrible. Now, he got bull rushed that one play. And he got
He got
his lunch money took. But at the same time, again, Clemson's a really good front seven. For you to be, you know, I think he's a redshirt freshman making that first start. Like, you've had a game. You've had 2 weeks to work as the starter. And I like Jalen Early. I think when last time I looked him up on PFF, he was one of the top 10 graded run blockers of the season. So I really like what you get out of Jalen Early. I think he'd probably be better as a guard than a tackle, because it's just, that's hard to play when you're so young like he is. So there's some changes there on offense, and I'll let you give me some thoughts on that before we go to the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, I saw this week that where Atkins was talking about Early specifically, and they're moving him inside. And so they're moving him to right guard. And so Atkins said that Early wanted it. He wanted to get to that. And so that kind of shows you that drive that, hey, I want to be a part of the solution to help this team get better. And so it'd be exciting to see him and Andre Otto. And honestly, this is probably the best game, maybe outside of a North Carolina or a Charleston Southern game, that you want to try to get those young offensive linemen in to see how much they can do. Obviously, the play time to start against Clemson helps that, because you kind of try to build off of that, the momentum of that. The one thing I will say about the offensive side of the depth chart, and Mike Norvell says all the time, he's like, I don't care about the depth chart. And yet he's always tinkering with it. Why is Kyle Morlock still on that depth chart?
I know.
If I see him on that field, I'm going to lose it.
I know. I don't know if he was listed on it last week or not, but he didn't play. So, I mean, at this point, I don't know that you're going to see him put on a shelf the rest of the season, but I think he should be, obviously. Yes. But man, if it's not Landon Thomas, and if it's not Amari Williams 99% of the game, I think that would be a really damnation on the decision making of this offensive staff.
What does he do well? He doesn't catch the ball well. He doesn't block well.
Nope.
Like, what does he do well?
No, not anything that I haven't seen Landon Thomas do better.
Correct.
And so I do think you need to see a lot of him this week too. So yeah, that's going to be a big question mark there, whether he's going to play or not. I noticed he was at the top of the depth chart, but it was all ors. So we'll see.
Yeah.
But you know, man, again, I do think here, like with Brock, I mean, just don't throw him the ball, man. just keep it to Landon. But yeah, I think with the offensive line, that going against Clemson as your first start, when you look at a guy like Andre Otto, I mean, it can only get better from here. I mean, because it's probably going to be easier. You also get Byers. He came back from injury against Clemson. He's got 2 weeks to kind of get healed up and get back in rhythm there. So you're really just hoping that they can clean up the snaps and all that stuff, because you're going to need your offensive line in this game.
That's right.
Now, looking at the defensive side of the ball, obviously we saw DJ Lundy removed from the depth chart with the season-ending injury there. Omar Graham Jr. and Juice Cryer are co-starters in place of Lundy. You know, Omar Graham Jr. was a guy we said we really didn't want to see on the field the rest of the season after the Georgia Tech game. I think he has gotten a little bit better throughout the season.
Yeah.
Juice Cryer is a guy that I like. I do at least think now that this staff is in a position where it's almost like they feel like if they see a guy who's playing well, they're going to stop hiding them behind the older guys. They're going to actually let them play. Yeah. So either one of them that I do like. And of course, Blake Nicholson has been good for you too. So he's there. KJ Kirkland gets the start at Buck safety.
That.
So I like it, man. KJ Kirkland is a guy who's played well. You saw a couple of times earlier the season where it's just, you know, young guys making young guy mistakes.
Right.
You just maybe you don't get far enough outside or you're out of place. But again, that's something they've had time to work on. So he gets start at Buck safety. Shaheem moves over to free safety. Again, Shaheem, you know, he's an older guy who's been a little inconsistent, but he's been playing well overall. So I think you leave him there. Man, just with how bad Conrad Hussey has looked and Devontae Brown, I think you got to get someone else in there.
Yeah.
And so I like the move here. The other thing I will touch on, and I'll throw it back to you for some thoughts on that, is Sam Singleton moves to kick returner in place of Deuce Spann. Now, Deuce Spann has had some electric kick returns, but man, he has done squat this year. So Sam Singleton is a guy we saw has really next level speed and hasn't really had a ton of opportunity to get the ball in his hands at running back. So this is the move I like too.
Yeah. Yeah. I like this move. Hopefully we don't have a lot of kick returns, because that means Duke is scoring. So, you know, Sam Singleton, I'm excited for you to have this move. Hopefully there is only one kick return. You get an access to.
Exactly.
And then, and you run that back for a touchdown. That'd be nice. But yeah, I think on the defensive side of the ball, I think it was time. I think KJ Kirkland has been showing some of that promise that you have there, and he, you know, making plays. And I thought this was a good move by Adam Fuller to try to get Shaheem in more of that free safety role, so he can kind of have a little bit more leverage and then use different persons in that personnel in that buck role there. Also, you know, the Edwin Joseph is now or with Kevin Knowles. So that's an opportunity for Edwin to go out there and prove himself as a young player. You know, I'm going to go ahead and assume that Sean Murphy is gone, lost for the season.
You know, they put out a happy birthday graphic for him
on
social media like yesterday or today. And I almost wanted to retweet it and be like, so he is still on the team.
So he's still on the team. Like, because I mean, just you saw him early. I can't remember what game it was, one of the games. And then you hadn't seen him since. So I'm assuming it's an injury or something like that. I don't like speculating, but I'm assuming it's that because the guy hasn't been on the depth chart. The one thing I was kind of disappointed in, if we're going with this like movement, is to see I really felt like we should have maybe put Byron Turner at starter over Marvin Jones Jr. Because I wanted to see if that would light a fire under MJJ.
Yeah.
Because I just really think there's more to him than what we're seeing in this season. But for some reason, have not been able, and by we, I mean the coaching staff, has not been able to tap. I'm not part of the coaching staff, but we haven't been able to tap into that potential. And so maybe saying, hey, man, you got to come off the bench because Byron's showing you stuff. He's showing you energy. He's in the plays. He's not loafing. He's not letting two offensive linemen scrape over you and push you back. And you're just like, oh, don't push me. You know, like.
Yeah. He's actually your highest graded or your highest ranked pass rusher as far as pass rush productivity per PFF.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think he's been better than people think. He's a very experienced guy with a lot of years in the system.
Absolutely. And so I was hoping for that. But otherwise, I would say I'm fairly happy with the depth chart. And what hopefully we'll see. Now, obviously, depth charts, SMET charts, like when the game happens, they're going to be rotating people in and all like that stuff.
Yeah.
It's really about the snap counts to see who is getting the most snap counts in this game. And I hope that Mike Norvell, regardless of what happens, he does not go back and tries to bring in those veterans because he thinks he has a chance to win the game. No, stick with the youngins. Let them play. Let them get this experience. Let them try to win this game.
Yeah, they've been the ones that have kept you in most of the games. I mean, there's a couple veterans like a Josh Farmer and guys like that that I think obviously need to play. But yeah, man, so getting into this Duke game, you know, Michael, it really feels like we have somehow, like speaking of the portal, we have stepped into a portal and we live in opposite land because we come into this game. Florida State is 1-5. Duke is 5-1. Duke is favored in this game by 3 points. Basically, you're getting the edge for home field advantage there. That's about what that 3-point spread is. It feels like opposite land, man. This just doesn't make any sense. This is not what we expected this season. And you know, man, technically the saddest thing about this game is by qualification on paper, this is a sod game. And so like, please, I know they're probably going to do it. Do not clip that sod. Do not bring that back to Tallahassee.
Do not.
We are not doing that against Duke, but technically it is. So man, just listen, go get the win, leave the grass.
Exactly. Listen, Florida State, leave the grass. Listen, listen, Florida State, I love you. Jesse loves you. We love you. We are no-blooded forever. We have very few, like, streaks and traditions still, like, that are sacred to us. One of them is we've never lost to Duke.
Yeah.
Another one of them is Duke never belongs in the sod cemetery. Let's not break that now.
Yeah, and you know, you bring up the next point here is the all-time record. Florida State has never lost to Duke, 22-0. Now, I know some people will post 20-0, but there was two wins that were vacated. But the real record is 22-0.
It's an
even split on the series. You're 11-0 in Tallahassee and 11-0 in Durham. So obviously, you've never lost up there either. Man, look, I'm going to say this for Mike Norvell's sake. This is a can't-lose game. And I know a lot of times they say can't lose, but like, listen, Mike, if you're listening. You broke the bowl streak. You broke the streak of non-losing seasons. Do not break the daggone streak of 22-0 versus Duke. You are, I mean, he's a streak setter. It's just in a bad way. He's a streak ender. So, like, don't do that, man. You go up here and win this game. But, you know, the funny thing about Duke, man, we always talk about this ain't your grandpa's college football. This ain't your grandpa's Duke either.
That's right.
You know, they won 9 games 2 years ago, 8 games last year. You know, had Riley Leonard not have got hurt, probably would have been a better team than that even. And then they're at 5-1 this year. So Duke is not a bad team. They've turned into a you know, elite. They're not elite, but they're definitely a bowl caliber team year in and year out now. Obviously, we know it's year one under Manny Diaz, takes over for Mike Elko, who departed for Texas A&M. And, you know, he did leave some. The thing is, Duke did lose some pieces to the portal whenever, obviously, Mike Elko left. They lost, obviously, the quarterback, Riley Leonard. They lost some defensive pieces. But this roster is in a better place than Duke has typically been. And going from one defensive head coach to another defensive head coach, there again, this is a defensively led team. But, you know, again, man, like we beat them in 2020 when we were both trash. We beat them last year when we were both good. So we kind of follow each other here. This year, what I'm worried about is they're pretty decent and we're not good. So
that's right,
man. We're gonna see how it goes. But now talking about Duke, let's do a kind of a big picture look at Duke here, because again, man, like this is a game that I feel like either team could win. This is a game that I feel like is truly the definition of a coin flip. And it says a lot to me when you're looking at a team is 1-5 versus a 5-1 team. And it's only a 3-point spread that everybody thinks could go either way. That right there tells you kind of where both teams are at. Even as bad as Florida State has been, this is a pretty straight up game. And the reason that I feel good about this game, and, you know, man, it's been a long time since I felt good about a Florida State game, probably a year. But the reason that I feel good about this game, man, is when I look at Duke, they are 5-1, but that record feels like fool's gold
shady,
to me.
Shady.
And so we're going to run through their games real quick. So game one, they beat Elon, a 1-5 SCS team, 26-3. And that game was only 13-0 halfway through the third quarter. Now, maybe you want to give them a little bit of grace there because it was Manny Diaz's first game. It was Malik Murphy's first game at quarterback, but still 26-3 against Elon. And, you know, man, this is the one thing that I hate about Florida State's schedule this year. We didn't have like a Duquesne. We didn't have like a, or like we, every week zero game from now on needs to be like a crappy FCS team. But then you look at game two, 26-20 at Northwestern, double overtime in that game. Northwestern is 2-3, and they hadn't won a Power Five game until last week when they beat Maryland. And now they put it on Maryland, but Maryland had four turnovers in that game. But that was their first Power Four win of the season. And, you know, they're playing in that temporary stadium this year. I looked it up. There was 11,000 people at that game. That Jeez. Is that is like the section of Doak that's empty. Is 11,000 people. So that's crazy because they're building a stadium on campus. So they're in like a soccer field or something like that this year. But still, 26-20 at Northwestern in double overtime. Not a very good team there. Game three, 26-21. Man, they love scoring some 26 points.
They do.
26-21 versus UConn. You know, UConn is not a good team. I mean, they're 4-2. I'll give them credit. They've gotten better under Jim Mora. But They've only beat one team with a winning record, UConn has, and that's Buffalo. They have no Power 5 wins. Of course, they're not a Power 4 team. They lost 50-7 versus Maryland, the only other Power 4 team they played. And UConn was winning that game in the fourth quarter. So, again, another kind of unimpressive win against a not great team. Then they go and they do hammer Middle Tennessee State 45-17. Middle Tennessee State is 1-5. They are bad. And when I say bad, they are bad. Every loss that they've had was by at least three scores, except for a 7-point win over a 2-4 FCS team. That's it. That's the only game that hasn't been a three-score blowout. Duke only outgained them by 45 yards, and Middle Tennessee State had four turnovers in that game, three fumbles. So it's not like they were just out there picking every pass off.
Right.
Then game five, I'll give them credit. This was a pretty good win here. 21-20 over UNC, rivalry game. Congrats on that. They were in Chapel Hill for that game, but UNC is 3-4. UNC has not beat a Power 4 team since the quarterback got hurt in game one against Minnesota. Think of the JMU game. Again, the 70-53 or whatever, 70-50 in that game. I mean, UNC is not good. And Duke trailed 20-0 before they had to come back.
You didn't say that. I was about to say it. They trailed 20-0.
Down 20-0 in that game. And then the last game that they played, the only good team that they played so far this season is Georgia Tech. 5-2 on the season. They got outgained 412-279. Georgia Tech ran through them. 245 yards on the ground. Held Duke to only 74 yards rushing. And that was the one game that I went back and watched the film. Really, like, Duke scored right after an interception got overturned on a pass interference call. So, and then Georgia Tech, they look like we did against Boston College, where they had like three chances to score a wide open touchdown, missed every single one of them, and kicked the field goal. So that game really could have been 27-7. Yep. I mean, it could have been way worse than that. But again, man, like this schedule is so soft. It's so easy. Like Florida State's 1-5. If Florida State played that schedule, they're probably 5-1, four, you know, maybe 4-2, something like that. I don't think they're 1-5. That's for daggone sure. But I'll kick it back to you on this because, again, man, like the one team that they played that was any decent, they lost to. But I'll kick it back to you after this. So when you look, and I don't typically like using combined opponent records here, but when you look at the combined opponent records, like I've told you guys, Florida State hasn't played any juggernauts, but they haven't really played any bad teams either. Florida State's opponents on this season have a combined record of 27-10. They played five Power Four teams, two ranked, and a 5-1 G5 team. Duke's combined record, opponent record here, is 17-21. They played three Power Four teams. They lost to the only Power Four team they played with a winning record. They played one FCS team and two G5 teams. They have not played anybody worth a flip other than Georgia Tech, and they lost.
Absolutely. You seen that thing? That meme is like, one of these is not the same.
Exactly. Right? Exactly.
One of these is not the same. Like, Florida State has played up to this point a more difficult schedule. I'm not saying it's the most difficult schedule so far. But
Duke's not 5-1 if they played Florida State's schedule.
Correct. Either. If Duke had played this schedule, they're definitely not 5-1. Definitely not 5-1. But the thing, the credit, where I will give Duke credit, Jesse, is the fact that they found a way to win.
Yep.
They found a way to win. Florida State has found ways to lose.
Yeah.
Five times. We've found, and you guys think I'm joking. No, we have found ways to lose these games.
Yeah.
You know, Clemson, okay, we may have got beat. Every other game outside of Cal, we found a way to lose the game. Like, it was absolutely ridiculous. And so where I will give Duke credit is that they found ways to win five games. They found a way to beat Northwestern in double overtime, to beat UConn, to beat you, to come back from 20 points down, to beat UNC, to beat Elon. And they weren't going to beat Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech was just a much better team. And so this team knows how to win. That's the credit I will give them. But the schedule of itself, not even in comparison. I agree with you. I think if Florida State had played this very schedule, at worst, they're 3-2 with the Georgia Tech loss, and just depending on how they came out against UNC, because we wouldn't have known what UNC was at the time. That's all I'm saying. But at worst, they're 3-2. But the fact that if Duke would have had a Florida State schedule, there's no way they're 5-1. And so the one of these is not the same. Duke is not on the same level as Florida State from a schedule standpoint. They haven't been truly tested until that Georgia Tech game. This is going to be their actual first real test at home.
Right, because despite the record, I do feel like Florida State is probably the second best team that they'll face so far this season outside of Georgia Tech, because obviously they beat us. But Duke's not beaten. They're not probably not beating Boston College. They're probably not beating Clemson for sure. You know, so they probably be 3-3. But you make a good point. You say this. I was actually on a Duke podcast earlier this week, previewing the game, or last week, previewing the game for them. And I said, look, man, at the end, I said, what really scares me the most about this game is I think it's going to come down to the end. I think it's going to be a close game, and it might even come down to who has the ball last.
Yeah,
but what scares me the most is that Duke has found ways to win in these games. In the moment, they found ways to win where we have found ways to lose. Like you said, we had a chance to win the Memphis game. We had a chance to win. I think we could have really played with Clemson had we not have freaking dropped every pass that we threw. You know, you had a chance to win Georgia Tech, and you let them go down the field and score on you. So we have had chances to win, maybe not SMU, but we've had chances. Well, you know, I mean, it was a 5-point game at halftime. Then you,
it was,
you know,
a 5-point game at halftime. You don't get that stupid holding random ghost call there, and you don't just turn a guy loose down the side of the field there. You're still in the game going into the fourth quarter.
Yeah. And the tip drill interception. If you don't have those things happen. So again, I think you make a great point that Florida State has really, they haven't learned to win yet. And Duke has. And that means something when it comes down to a close game. So let's flip our attention to the offensive side of the ball here. And this is something that I'm excited to talk about, because finally, I think we found someone that has just as bad an offense as Florida State. not as bad, but it's not good either. Again, keep in mind, everything that we talk about in this has to be couched with the fact that they haven't played a tough schedule. So even when it doesn't look good, it hasn't looked good against a bad schedule. Now, this is a run heavy team. And, you know, some of the things that I actually learned from being on that Duke podcast actually surprised me about some things with this team. But they like to run the ball. Doesn't necessarily mean they're good at it. They like to take shots downfield. Also doesn't mean they're very good at it. But they do like to take a lot of shots. Malik Murphy has a big arm, and they like to use it to try and loosen up that defense a little bit. They will go tempo. They did that against Georgia Tech, and they move the ball that way. So I think it's not a terrible offense, but it's not good by any means. I mean, when you look at scoring offense, averaging 26.3 points per game, 84th in the country. Their passing offense is averaging 240 yards per game, 60th in the country. Rushing offense, 113 yards per game, 111th in the country. So it's not, again, not that great there. Again, Georgia Tech has a pretty decent defense and held them to 74 yards rushing. And so when you look at the one place that's really enticing to talk about is their third down offense, 28.8%, 129th in the country. Terrible. Love it. Love to see it.
Get them to third down.
Get them to third down and you can get off the field. The Duke offense in the red zone scores on 18 of 21 trips, 85.7%. So pretty good there. 14 touchdowns, 4 field goals. But FSU's defense in the red zone has not been terrible. I believe it's actually somewhere around top 25, top 30 in the red zone. So hopefully you can slow them down there. What I find really interesting here, Michael, is that Georgia Tech is the best defense that they've faced so far this season, right? Georgia Tech is also the only defense that they have faced this season that ranks in the top 50. They're number 50. Coincidentally, Florida State is the 53rd ranked defense, allowing only 0.2 points per game less than Georgia Tech. And Georgia Tech held them to 14 points and maybe could have been 7 with that overturn interception. So again, you talk about what Georgia Tech was able to do, held them to 14 points, held them under 100 yards rushing. Your defense, you know, again, man, like I would almost like to see what I would have to go back and do this manually, so I don't have time to do that now. But I would almost like to see what Florida State's defense is after those first two games, because they play respectively. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like if the offense doesn't wear them out throughout the game, because we don't really play complementary football, this defense isn't terrible if they try hard. And that's sad to say, but it's the truth. This defense isn't terrible. So I really do think if you look at they are averaging 26 points a game, and Georgia Tech held them to 14, and you're a comparable defense to Georgia Tech, I think you can probably hold them in the 20-point range, and I think that gives you a chance to win. Now, there's a lot of other things I want to talk about in this offense, but, you know, give me some thoughts on that, on those stats that we just talked about.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Duke lives on the big play. That's why they're boomer busts, especially when it comes to third down, because they thrive on the explosive offense. They will take shots down the field over and over again. And basically what they're going to try to do is to get you thinking, okay, I need to play more, you know, cover two, more cover four palms, which is basically your two safeties are playing deep zone, and then your cornerbacks are playing one side of the field. So that's palm coverage there. And then all they're trying to do is take those shots and then loosen up the underneath, get your linebackers thinking deep. And then that way they'll have an in route, the in breaking route with a wide receiver coming across, a slot guy, or maybe the wide out coming in, or they'll have the running back come out of the back and kind of catch you right there. A little 5-yard dump off that turns into a 25, 30-yard completion, because they're trying to get you to get there. And then you're going to come up, and that's where they're going to come over the top. Also, Murphy, you know, he's not like, I'm not going to say he's like the greatest dual threat quarterback out there, but he can make you miss a little bit. And so if you lose contain on him, he's going to run around you. And so I think with that kind of offense, though, if our defense continues to show the improvement they have with the communication, it's going to be imperative. Again, this is another offense. We're going to say this again. You've got to communicate. You got to know when to pass off. They're going to run those in out routes where they switch right at the snap. And so everybody needs to know who's going out, who's coming in. What kind of leverage do you have? Do you have inside leverage, outside leverage? We got to communicate that, because if we do, we can actually find ourselves forcing Duke to be in third and longs, right? And then we got to get off the field.
Yes.
So that is a key thing. We've got to get off the field on third down. We cannot continue to give up big chunk plays on first or second down and then get or stop them on first, second down, and then give up a big chunk play on third down. We've got to be able to get off the field.
Yeah. I mean, you got a team that's terrible at third down. It's time to actually get off the field on third down.
Yes.
But you're right, man. They scored against Georgia Tech on one of those little underneath routes when they ran everybody deep and they got a guy across the middle, and then Georgia Tech couldn't. That was a busted coverage. They didn't cover the guy. But that goes back to what you're talking about with communication. If you communicate well, I mean, they took a 10-yard pass and took it 40 yards for a touchdown. But the next thing I want to talk about here is Malik Murphy, because I do differ from you on one thing here. And I will say that, which was actually surprising, right? And first, let me talk about his passing first before we get into that. But when you look at Malik Murphy, man, when they took Malik Murphy from in the portal, I was like, wow, Look at you, Duke. Got a former five-star from Texas. Okay, I see you. You cooking Manny Diaz. he's just a young guy, right? He needs some more experience. He's not really played significantly. You know, he's not been great this year. He's been okay. He's not been bad, but he's not been great. And I think what's interesting, too, is you look at how when the competition has gotten tougher, you look at the last two games. Like the first four games, his completion percentage was above, you know, 65, 61.5, 65.1, 66.7. But the last two games, 42.9 against UNC, 58.1 against Georgia Tech. Mm. The yardage has come down to just north of 200, where he was like 250, 290 in the first couple games. Against UNC, he only threw for one touchdown in that game. Against Georgia Tech, he threw for two touchdowns and a pick. His PFF grades have went from 75, 75, 83, 60, 62, 51. So he's really started to struggle against the tougher competition. His numbers aren't terrible on the season, 125, 208, 60.1% completion percentage, 1,431 yards, 14 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. But, man, I mean, when you start to look at some of the more advanced numbers, I think this is an opportunity. You remember when I talked about in the last episode I teased there was something that I had my eye on that I really think this is where Florida State can win this game. And these are going to be some of these things when you look at the quarterback position. So, first off, his adjusted completion percentage. Like, he's got a cannon, man. He's got a good arm.
Yeah,
he just he's kind of DJU-ish, right? He's not very accurate. So when and I do a 50 dropback minimum on these numbers from PFF to kind of get rid of like guys who might come in and throw a two passes or something like that. So you kind of get the starters here in adjusted completion percentage per PFF, which is your on target passes. Okay. He's 66%. That's 16th in the ACC. So dang near the bottom. QBR in the entire country, 46.6, 94th in the country. PFF pass grade, he's 68th in the country. Brock Glenn is higher than that. Now, he is tied for fourth in big-time throws. That's dropping it in a bucket down the field. But he also is third in passing attempts because, again, like we talked about, they take a lot of shots here.
Yeah.
So here's what's interesting, man. They talking about throwing the ball deep. He is tied for fifth in attempts over 20 yards. He's tied for third in the ACC. In attempts from 10 to 19 yards. They love to push the ball down the field. But here's the catch. He is last in the ACC in completion percentage in both areas. So they throw it down the field a lot. They just don't do a whole lot with it.
Connect a lot. Okay.
His completion percentage on deep throws, 20-plus yards, is only 24.3%.
Wow.
His completion percentage from 10 to 19 yards is only 38.2%. So they are not doing a whole lot with these deep shots. And I think one thing that does help with that, too, and maybe this is kind of like what we saw with DJU, which is an inaccurate passer. You know, we talk about Florida State's receivers struggling, having the lowest catch percentage in all of the ACC. Guess who's the second lowest? That would be Duke. Their reception percentage is only 61.8%. It's still a little bit higher than Florida State's at 60.6. But again, you have a quarterback who's kind of inaccurate and a receiver group who's got some pieces, but they're not overly special here.
Yeah.
So that's one thing that I found really, really interesting about Malik Murphy here is he does love to push the ball down the field, just not very good at it. Now, Florida State, listen, we love to make not good quarterbacks look like Heisman contenders. Do not let him do this. But here's the one thing that I was telling you about. This is where I think Florida State can win this game. This is the key. This is where I differ from you a little bit because I actually thought Malik Murphy, he looks like a mobile guy, right?
Yeah.
When I was on that Duke podcast, I was like, we struggle with mobile quarterbacks. And he said, oh, no. Far from mobile. He said he refuses to run the ball. And it's actually a point of frustration for Duke fans. And I was pretty surprised. I was like, wait a minute. Let me go look this up. So it's true, man. He does not run the ball. He's got negative 58 yards on the season rushing. But if you go to sack adjusted yards, he's got negative 15 sack adjusted yards on the season. He only has one game where he has more than one rushing attempt. Only one game where he's ran the ball more than one time. He does not run the ball. Now, that doesn't mean he can't move around the pocket, like you said, but he does not run the ball. Now, the tough part is they have a good defense or a good offensive line. They are top 10 in pass block efficiency, but again, keep in mind who they've played.
That's right.
And this is where I think Florida State has a real advantage here. So Malik Murphy has not faced more than 8 pressures this season so far. He's got a 19.4 pressure to sack percentage, 24% against FBS teams if you wash away that FCS game. That's pretty high. So if you can get back there, you can get him on the ground. If you can get pressure in this game, and I'm going to give you one of my keys right now, and that is pressure, pressure, pressure. You've got to get pressure on him. So he has had a clean pocket, 83.4% of dropbacks. Boy, I bet Florida State quarterbacks pray for times like that. He has only been under pressure 16.6% of dropbacks. When he's in a clean pocket, his completion percentage is 65.7%, 11 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, PFF grade of 81.9. Under pressure, his completion percentage is 21.4%, 3 touchdowns, 3 picks, and a PFF grade of 39. You have got to get pressure on this guy because you can make him make mistakes. And here's why I start drooling when I start thinking about this. Florida State, you know, we struggle against mobile quarterbacks. This is probably the least mobile quarterback you faced all season, which is a surprise to me. I thought he was a mobile guy. That's why I was worried about this game. Mm-hmm. Florida State against non-mobile quarterbacks. Memphis, remember I told you that he had not faced more than 8 pressures so far this season. Memphis, 16 pressures, 3 sacks. Cal, 19 pressures, 7 sacks.
Yeah.
Clemson, and Cade Klubnik is a somewhat mobile guy. 11 pressures, 3 sacks. This is my key to the game. If that's, you rattled Cal. You got back there, 7 sacks, 19 pressures. You have got to bring the heat in this game. Adam Fuller, again, if you're
looking at you, looking at me.
Look at me. 2 fingers to me, 2 fingers to you. If you're looking, look, they like to run the ball. There is no reason you should not load the box in this game, because if you can get pressure on Murphy, you can make him make mistakes. You can rack up the sacks on him. That also helps you stop the run, which they like to do. They are a run-heavy team. So to me, I'm loading the box. I'm putting my corners on islands. I'm letting these guys, I'm letting them try to hit them one-on-ones with an inaccurate quarterback. But man, when I saw this, this completely changed my outcome, my idea of this game. When I saw that Murphy was not mobile, and I know how good Florida State has been, they're not good at much. They're really good at getting pressure on non-mobile quarterbacks. Man, I think this can be a real difference maker in this game.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, if he is as immobile as you have said, which makes me be like, what did I just watch then? That gives Florida State an advantage, because now you can just pin your ears back on those passing downs, right? You still got to communicate. They're still going to run the motion. They're going to do what every team has done against you all season, because Georgia Tech gave them the blueprint of how do you confuse this. And so you have seen improvement in Florida State's defense around this area of communicating, dealing with the motion man. They're going to run a lot of motion again for you, because they want to try to get matchups against you. But if you can do that and you can force that line to be uncomfortable, you can make him either get him down or make him make some errant throws. He threw a couple of interceptions, I believe, against Georgia Tech, all because Georgia Tech was able to get some pressure on him to do that. So if you can, if that front four of yours, if they can get some pressure right up the middle, because that's where you want to get them. You want to move them off the launch. Then you could potentially see where that defense can hold that offense down to their scoring, below their scoring average.
Yeah, and I'm blitzing the pants off of this quarterback. I mean, why not? Again, like you said, you know, you just look at him, man. I mean, you again, when I saw he wasn't mobile, and I know what Florida State did against Cal, mm-hmm. I think you copy and paste that game plan, man. If you can go back there and get him, again, like we talked about, he likes to take deep shots, but he's very inaccurate. They're not great at it. So, you know, you got big corners, man. You got big corners and big safeties.
Right.
You should have a size advantage against some of these receivers. So, to me, man, that's where you really got to make your hay in this game, is loading the box and making Malik Murphy throw to beat you, because I don't think he can do it.
Exactly. And you've got,
let me knock on some wood real quick.
Let me do that too. But like, I think for like the same thing for me, like if your number one key right now is pressure on the defense, my number one key is like pressure with communication. You've got to communicate, because if you do not communicate, there was one play where Georgia Tech sent a gap blitz, and an A gap blitz, for those who don't know, is a blitz right at the center, either side of the center. Okay. They sent a double A gap blitz, and they literally let the end breaking wide receiver just come through. No one within 10 yards on this dude. Malik hits him, boom, touchdown. Like, you cannot allow that to happen. You've got to communicate if you're going to send a lot of pressure.
Yeah, I mean, you really got to rely on these guys on the back end. If you're going to send the heat, you got to have guys that got to play cleanup. Yep. I mean, you again, all this stuff can't come at the expense of giving up something else.
That's right.
But I think this is a huge opportunity in here against an offense that has not been great for you to really disrupt that offense. Because again, That's right. You got one of the better, I mean, I know they haven't been great, but you got one of the better defensive lines that they have faced so far this season. I mean, Josh Farmer is legit NFL product type of guy. So you need him to eat in this game. And if he does, I think you're going to have a good game. So to round out the Duke offense at running back, you got two main guys here that you need to know about. Star Thomas is their leading rusher, 528 yards, 4.67 yards per carry. Peyton Jones is another guy there, 164 yards, 4.32 yards per carry. They do have Jaquez Moore, but he's been hurt throughout most of the season, so he's not really a factor right now. At receiver, the two guys you need to keep your eye on is Jordan Moore. They got a lot of Moores here. They got more Moores going on here. He is their leading receiver, 30 receptions, 443 yards, 3 touchdowns, and then Eli Pancall is the one to really keep your eye on here.
Yeah.
23 receptions, 294 yards, 5 touchdowns, 6'3", 205. He's a big receiver, so you're going to want to make sure you stay matched up on him with one of your bigger corners like AZ or somebody like that. But yeah, man, I mean, they got some playmakers. I'm not going to lie. They got a couple playmakers here and there throughout this offense, but it's not a great offense. It's not an explosive offense, and I really think if Florida State brings the effort and they bring the energy and they play hard like we've seen them do, I think you can hold this offense to around 20 points or less like Georgia Tech did, and I think that gives you an opportunity to win.
Yeah, I will say this, going with Jordan and Eli. They're good players, don't get me wrong. And so Duke, if you're watching this, don't hear me say that they're not good players. They're good players. But I saw Georgia Tech secondary that really in a lot of ways held them in check. I mean, they gave up the two scores there, but again, those two score, one came on a busted coverage blitz, right up the A gap, and then another one came because they didn't communicate and they let the guy just run they let Eli run literally an end breaking route. Out, no one within 20 yards of the guy, and then he just outruns everybody to the end zone. But for the most part of that game, Georgia Tech secondary pretty much had them, now I won't say locked down, but provided great coverage or good enough coverage against them. And so if our secondaries, if they have good communications back there and they get on those one-on-one islands, man, you got to be a dog and go win them. Because it's these wide receivers have proven over 6 games that they're not like super crazy dynamic.
Right.
They're not Jeremiah Smith. They're not any of those other guys out there. They're coverable guys, but you've got to have the dog in you to go do it. I watched Georgia Tech do it. I think you're a better athlete than those Georgia Tech secondary. So you should be able to get that job done.
Right. I mean, again, man, I know they haven't played great this season on the back end of this defense, but this is a good secondary. And they should, like you said, man, I mean, these guys are solid ACC players, but they are not like NFL level, maybe the Panko guy, maybe because he's got size, but these are not guys that should just eat on you. They should not scare you.
No.
Right. And so Florida State, man, if they come to play, that's why I feel good about this game, because I do feel like this is a game that you don't need to score 30 points to win, because you can hold that offense in check. But let's flip over to the defense, because this is where it's going to get tougher. This is a good defensive team. Again, you're coming from Mike Elko. You're going to Manny Diaz. And listen, Manny, you know, he may not have been immensely successful down there in Moral Gables, but they always had good defenses. It was kind of the offenses that they had trouble. He did good at Penn State as a defensive coordinator there. So they are a good, solid defense. Again, man, I think this is kind of like we just talked about with the wide receivers here. It's not NFL talent. It's not really high-level talent on this defense, but it's a really well-coached defense. They don't make a lot of mistakes. They're not going to give you really any freebies here. They like to bring pressure. They like to give you different looks to confuse your offense. And the one thing that really stands out when I watch that Georgia Tech game, man, they got some really good linebackers.
Yeah.
So, again, it's not the greatest defense, but it's daggone good. Now, keep in mind, again, when I give you these numbers, this has been against not the greatest competition here.
Right.
Scoring defense, 17.5 points a game allowed, 24. So, you know, by statistics, it's a top 25 defense. But I will say with that, they have faced the best that they've faced is UConn at 24th. You know, that again, that's a G5 to P5 type of difference, or P4. They only scored 7 points against Maryland when they played them. So again, not they racked up a lot of points against some really bad teams. That's UConn, that is. And then they played Georgia Tech, which was the next best offense, I think, that right around 41st, and Georgia Tech put up 24. So, you know, we'll see. Florida State hasn't put up 20 points, over 20 points since the Georgia Tech game. You know, but again, we talked about this last week. If you stop shooting yourself in the foot, you had 23 points at least against Clemson. You just kept dropping passes. The passing defense, this is what scares me the most about this game, is the fact that they're only giving up 158 yards a game, 14th ranked pass defense in the country. The problem with that is we are very pass reliant because we cannot run the ball. So if we can't throw the ball, we're cooked. It's over. You're going to have to throw the ball. They have faced three top 50 pass offenses. So again, now those aren't top 25, but top 50 pass offenses. We're not in the top 50. So again, you have to figure this is a good pass defense. They've only allowed over 170 yards through the air one time, and that was against UNC with 251 yards. Now, here's the other thing that I'm watching in this game. You know, Florida State, I said on the last episode, I believe it was, you played top 50 rush defenses in five of the six games on the first half of your schedule. You only have two left. That's Miami and Notre Dame on the back half of the schedule. So far this season, this is going to be the worst run defense that you faced all season. They're giving up 152 yards per game, 79th in the country. Like we said, Georgia Tech ran through them over 250 yards on the ground. I don't expect Florida State to just have some explosion of rush yards and rush for 200 yards. It's not going to happen. But again, this is the worst rush defense that you faced all season. I think if Florida State, and again, this goes back to my Trouble in the Trenches episode that I did, Florida State's record is significantly better when you run for triple digits. The only game we've won this season was against Cal, which coincidentally was the only game we ran for over 100 yards this season. Right. So I think in this game, you need to hit triple digits on the ground, and you have an opportunity to do it. I know we can't run the ball. I get it. I've watched the games too. But this is an opportunity against a rush defense that has not been stellar this season. So that's something I'm watching this game. The last thing I will say here is they might be terrible at third downs on offense, but they are not terrible at third downs on defense. Only allowing conversions at a 29.3% rate, which is 11th in the country. Red zone defense is not that great, surprisingly. They are giving – now, they don't give up a lot of red zone trips, only 15 on the year, but they've allowed scores at an 86.7% clip, 13 of 15, 9 touchdowns, 4 field goals. Florida State's offense, they ain't made it to the red zone a lot either here. Only 12 trips so far this year, but they've scored on 83% of them, 7 touchdowns, 3 field goals. So, man, I think this is a good defense. They've not played a lot of tough offenses. I think you have an opportunity to run the ball here. We know this is Florida State. They're not going to run the ball for some crazy number, but I think they can hit triple digits, and I think that really helps the offense move the chains and stay on this field, keep the defense rested, and go down and get some points. So that's something I'm really watching this game. It's a good defense, but I think there is some window dressing there.
There is. I mean, this is the year. This is one of the years we talked about this in the pre-show, is that this is one of those years where Manny Diaz has blitzed more than he ever has percentage-wise in his career. I believe he's calling the defensive play calls. I think that's the case, but if not, it doesn't matter. This is the most he's ever blitzed in a Manny Diaz type defense ever. So he is bringing the heat, and it's exotic. I mean, it's not like your typical, you know, I'm gonna send somebody in the A-gap, I'm gonna send a corner. No. It'll be like, I'll send an A-gap, a corner, and a safety, but the safety is gonna roll down late after you take your second step of your third drop of the drop, right? Or I'm gonna have a linebacker. I'm gonna have two linebackers showing an A gap blitz. Like, they're gonna come on the A gap, and then what I'm actually gonna do is bring your corners on your C gaps, right? And then back out your linebackers out of the A gap, and then you might throw to your hot route, but that now that's a pick because the linebacker's back there. I mean, he's going to try to confuse Brock Glenn and this offensive line, which is going to be imperative since we got two young bucks on that line. That communication, again, going back to one of our keys, communication on the offensive line is going to be imperative, because this is a team that doesn't mess around. They, Jesse, I can't remember if you gave this stat or not, but they lead the nation and tackles for a loss. They are number one in the country with 58. They average 9.7 TFLs per game. They like to live in your backfield. They don't care. They don't care if it's a bus on the back end, because they believe they can get to you before you can get that ball out. They got four interceptions on the year, so not super great. They got 18 sacks in the country right now. They have five forced fumbles. And like you said, you know, they're 11th in third down conversion percentage, and they're 47th in the country of first downs given up. So, I mean, 47 might not sound like a lot, but that's pretty good. That's in a pretty decent realm. They don't give up a lot of first downs. So if you don't pick up significant yards, Florida State offense, like what you're looking at in my mind, Jesse, is if I'm trying to call plays, my goal, if I'm Mike Norvell, is I want my offense to be in no worse than a second and six, or and then no worse than second and six on second down, and no worse than third and five on third down. Because if you're anywhere longer than that, it's going to be a hard, because then you're going to start seeing really exotic things happen with you in that sense. And Duke, like I said, they don't mess around. They like to live in your backfield.
Yeah, they really dial up the pressure on third and long too. If you're in third and long, they're coming for you. And we know this offensive line, again, we talked about this, man. This is going to be a really big game for blitz pickup. Not even so much for just pass blocking in a sense with the offensive line, just man on man, but blitz pickup. And so that does worry me. Now, you got some veterans at center and your tackles, so you're hoping that you can communicate well, but it's not been something that we've been great so far. The running back is going to be a big part of this too with blitz pickup. So hopefully that's something they've been working on this week. Now, I do want to touch on some things that you said here. Yes, that was one of the next thing I was going to mention. Now, I have them as second in TFLs. I have Ole Miss at first with 66 per the stats site that I use. But either way, they're top two in tackles.
They're top two, basically.
They are making a lot of negative plays. So knowing that they make a lot of negative plays, you got to try and get these plays, man. You have to try and stay ahead of the chains, because if you get into these long down situations, like you mentioned, man, you're going to be in trouble. Now, I do want to mention two things here that you brought up that I think are interesting on both sides.
Okay.
And that is sacks, because we know that Florida State's offensive line has not been great at pass blocking.
Correct.
So that worries me. Now, they do have 18 sacks, which is tied for ninth on the season. There's some window dressing to that too.
Okay.
14 of those sacks came in two games.
Oh.
Eight of those sacks came against Elon, a 1-5 FCS team.
Right.
Six of those sacks came against Middle Tennessee State, who is also not very good.
Okay. Fair.
They had zero sacks against Northwestern, two against UConn, two against UNC, and one against Georgia Tech. Now, here's the other thing too, right? They created 18 pressures against Elon. And like you said, now this is the other thing I want to touch on that you nailed it, man. They blitz a ton. In that Elon game, they blitz 56% of dropbacks. Oof. Northwestern, they blitz 52.5%. UConn, 32.3%. Middle Tennessee State, 52.3%. So they're blitzing, I mean, almost over 50% average right now. UNC, here's the interesting thing now. They got 18 pressures against Elon, 7 against Northwestern, 9 against UConn. Middle Tennessee State, so the bad teams are really racking up pressure. Middle Tennessee State, 18 pressures. UNC, they got 23 pressures, but only two sacks. Now, here's the interesting thing. UNC, you know, they had a completely new offensive line this year. They have allowed 19, 23, and 20 pressures in their last three games. So their offensive line just isn't very good. Giving up 20 pressures is what they do. Now, Georgia Tech, they only got four pressures and one sack in that game, and they blitzed 48.5% of the time. So,
man,
we know, we saw it firsthand with our own eyes. Georgia Tech's got a good offensive line. You are not at the level of Georgia Tech. You're probably somewhere, you know, you're probably somewhere between them and UNC. So you just really can't let Brock Glenn be running for his life back there. But again, they make negative plays. They blitz a ton, and they do have a lot of sacks. But I did find it interesting that they got 14 of their 18 sacks in only two of those games. So all the other games have been kind of two or less, 2-1-0. And then the other thing I will mention before we get ready to kind of go into keys and concerns and predictions here is the one thing to mention is Duke is better than you in turnover margin at plus two, 56 in the country. Yeah. We're terrible at turnover margin. Yes. Minus six, 118th in the country. So again, in a game that might be low scoring, you don't want to give them any extra at bats. So you want to take care of the football in this game. But yeah, man, that was some interesting things. Like you said, they are bringing a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
But the sack numbers have some window dressing too there.
See, I think, thank you for bringing that up. That's a great point. And it actually, it does change my mind a little bit. I'm like, okay, maybe Florida State can handle, if Florida State can figure out the communication piece of this, maybe they can handle that blitz pickup with them. The thing I will say, I went back and checked real quick just to make sure. Florida State is 96th in the country in tackles for loss allowed. 96. That's not good. That Florida State allows on average 6.3 tackles for loss per game. That's on average. And if Duke is averaging 9.7, now how many did you say they had against Georgia Tech?
You talking about pressures? Four pressures, one sack.
One sack, but that doesn't count the tackle for loss. So we don't know how many tackles for loss they had in that game. I have to go back and look at that. But if they are, my whole point is if they're forcing Florida State into second and long and third and long, this is going to be a long night for that offense because they come at you like crazy. 48% a blitz percentage against Georgia Tech. You know that's going to ramp up against Florida State because they're playing with house money. They're 5-1. No one, even though they're favored, no one expects them. They've never beat Florida State, right? So everyone's going to assume all the pressure's on Florida State to win, but really the pressure's on Duke. And so they're gonna bring the house every which way they can to try to disrupt you, or they're going to show like they're bringing the house and then bring it from one side and then back out on the other side or back out in the middle. They're just going to really try to confuse this line and confuse Glint Brock. And so communication, like if there's, again, when we talk about keys, like that is big for me. They've got to be able to communicate well, to know who's picking up who, where the running back needs to go, who's going to be the hot route for Brock when he needs to get. Can Brock get out of the pocket when that blitz comes and extends the play or runs and picks up a first down? I think all of those are going to be key. But it does now make me change my mind a little bit. Like, oh, okay, maybe those sacks weren't all pretty as I initially thought they were.
Now I will cut a little icing off the cake here. We have given up, I just looked it up, 18 pressures against Clemson, 19 Jeez. Against SMU, and 20 against Cal. So, like, we have not – we give up a lot of pressures, too.
Yeah.
But I am hoping, again, that with Brock Glenn's mobility, you can not let that turn into sacks. So, really, with that being said, man, again, like, they're good, man. They're a good coach defense. They're going to try and confuse you. I think you make a great point that communication is going to be key. Communication is going to be key on the receiver and the quarterback too, because that's what led to Brock's interception last week was, running the wrong route, going the wrong way on that. Communication is going to be key. I mean, this is a 40,000 seat stadium. It's not going to be the most intimidating environment. I think Florida State's going to have a pretty good chunk there. I think Florida State might have probably around 5,000 fans at this game. I've seen a lot of people talking about going, but you know, I mean, Florida State's used to playing in big environments, but it's going to be key because they'll make you pay if you don't.
That's right.
And so with that being said, that's offense and that's defense. I will say to just watch their kick returner too. He's been pretty good. He had a big return against Georgia Tech that set them up to go down. Now, they weren't able to score on it, but he did have a big kick return there. So that's going to be something to watch. But we can get into our keys, concerns, and predictions in this game. And so, I'll just throw out my first key here that because I've really already talked about it. And on defense, that is you have got to create havoc in the backfield. Mm-hmm. You've got to get pressure on Malik Murphy. Make him throw to win the ball and limit those explosive plays. The reason I say limit those is because he's going to throw it deep. You cannot go out here and get beat on these deep routes if you're the Florida State's secondary. It's time to man up and play like we've seen you play in the past. You got to be able to go out there and be on an island and limit them explosive plays. You have to get pressure on Murphy. Like we talked about, he is not great under pressure. Not every quarterback is. I mean, obviously that's tough.
Right.
But you look at that, the difference, 65.7% completion percentage compared to 24. If you can get pressure on him, he is a non-mobile guy. He's not going to run it on you. He's going to stand back there and try and read the field. You have got to create pressure like you did against Cal. If you can do that, if you can get 20 something pressures and 4, 5, 6 sacks, man, I'm going to feel really, really good about where you're going to be at to win this game. So that is my key for the defense here. On offense, my key is to run the ball for at least 100 yards because, again, technically, this is the worst run defense you faced all season. I'm not saying Florida State's going to go out and run for 200 yards. We haven't run for 200 yards all season. Like, man, listen, the guy's going to the NFL, but, like, back of the Brinks truck and go get me the guy from Boise State. My
goodness. Oh my gosh.
He outruns us in one game as we run in the whole season. this stuff. But man, if you hit 100 yards on the ground, that's going to loosen things up for Brock Glenn. That's going to help you out. Again, the only game we've won this season was Cal, was also the only game we ran for 100 yards in a game. Yep. So you need to do that. Toa Philly needs to have a big game in this one. And to that point, I would like to see them use Brock Glenn's legs a little bit more in this game. I would like, he didn't really do that a whole lot last time against Clemson, but I would like to see them use his legs a little bit more to help out this offensive line, to help out this run game. And then just the other key on the offense here, man, catch the damn ball. Like, stop dropping passes. Just catch the ball. And then the little bonus key here that I got to say is, I think in this one, man, it's time to uncage Ryan Fitzgerald. Let that man loose. Let him kick the ball. We see he ain't really kicked it a whole lot since the Georgia Tech game. And when you go against SMU and that high-powered offense, when you will go against Clemson and their high-powered offense, you're not going to win the game kicking field goals. We know that. Against Duke, a team that I feel like your defense can hold them to 20-ish, 24, 24 or less points, you need points in this game. Points are at a premium. You can win this game with a couple of field goals and a couple of touchdowns. If you get close, man, don't be stupid. Take the points in this game because you can win this game with 24 points. So go out and let Ryan Fitzgerald kick some field goals in this one.
Yeah. I think those are great keys. And mine's a follow up to yours is number one, we've been talking about already. I think you got to communicate on both sides of the ball. On defense, you've got to make sure you have located where what you are. Are you outside leverage, inside leverage? Do you got the man coming inside, right? Who's got the quarterback if he surprisingly decides to run on us, right? How are we playing this defense? How are we playing this coverage? Like, we've got to communicate. You know they're going to try to run some of those rail routes that Georgia Tech showed, that every other team has been running us. You know they're going to run some crossers, or the man beaters, as they're called, because we've seen other teams do that. You know they're going to try to put a lot of motion in place to confuse us. Make sure we communicate. On offense, we've got to communicate because they're going to blitz. I looked at it. Georgia Tech gave up 10 tackles for loss against Duke. Again, they averaged 9.7 tackles for loss per game. They had 10 against Georgia Tech. They are coming. In the words of Dion, we coming. They coming. They're going to send everybody, your grandma, your uncle, your granddaddy, they're going to find everybody they can to try to blitz you in different ways. And so you've got to be able to communicate on offensive line. This is going to be mostly on Maurice Smith as the center, who's making those calls to help Brock back there. But also Brock is going to have to be able to point out, know where the mic's at, know where his hot route's at, and be able to get that done. So they got to communicate. Number two for me, get creative on offense. This is for Mike Norvell. Get creative. You haven't been able to run the ball. You've been absolutely hot garbage running the ball. Figure out a way to run the ball against Duke. You've got to get creative, whether that's go Wildcat, whether that's – listen, I have been the biggest, like, screamer at my TV about stop running these wide receiver screens because they're going nowhere. And then I watched Georgia Tech run them mercilessly against Duke. So – here I am submitting to the almighty power of the wide receiver screen. Mike Norvell, call a bunch of them. Call them all which ways. Run some little shuttle passes where the running back comes in and you shuttle right behind the offensive line. Throw some tunnel screens, bubble screens, because Duke is not good at defending these. Okay, so I'm good with that. Get creative on offense. Let's see some Wildcat. Let's see some different things there. And then, Jesse, my final point is, listen, you're 1-5, bro. You're 1-5.
Right.
Duke is 5-1. The pressure is on them. They're going to have a sold-out stadium. All those nerds are going to be bringing their calculators, trying to add up how to get this way and how to – whatever they're going to do. All the pressure's on them. You're 1-5. Play free. Jesse, and I'm not condoning things like this. I'm not saying we should always do this. But grab somebody off the bench that never plays, that don't matter to the game, and say, go get a targeting foul. Go get a targeting foul, okay? First play of the game, I just need you to jack somebody up, okay?
Yeah.
Real quick. And then go back in the locker room, chill out. We'll make sure you get an extra NIL deal because of that, right? Like, I don't really care. Like, just show some passion. Play free. Yeah. Play fun. Don't get stupid penalties. But, man, just play, like, aggressive. Be aggressive. You know, talk some stuff when you get in that game. Like, make them remember. This is Florida State. They've not won games in 22 opportunities, and it's about to be 0-23. Remind them of that and go out there and play tough, play free.
Right, man. I totally agree. That's the one thing that I think has been really disappointing with Florida State this year has been that you haven't seen any really big hits. You haven't seen them just punch somebody in the mouth, come out and act like they just want to take a game literally away from. Right. Hey, if you want, but you know, I mean, what else have we got to lose? But yeah, man, just play with fire, play with passion, like come out and take a game from somebody. That's what you really need to see in this game. So yeah, I'm hoping that that's something that we can see too. And like I said, man, I really do think like my biggest concerns in this game is that they do know how to win. You know, that is one of my biggest concerns here is that they have found ways to win these games when the game is on the line and Florida State has not. And so can Florida State in the heat of the moment go into their stadium at night in front of their fans and go take a game away from somebody? You know, what I'm hoping, and like we always say on the show, look, hope is not a strategy, but hope what I'm hoping is you've had the bye week to figure some things out. Brock Glenn has gotten that start under his belt. He's had 2 weeks to prepare as the starter here. He's had 2 weeks to get on the same page as these receivers. You've had 2 weeks to get these young guys up to speed for this next game. Duke is a good team. They are a well-coached team. They play well together, but they are not an elite team full of talent. They played a bunch of cupcakes, like we talked about with Miami. They got fat off a bunch of cupcakes. Then when they had to start playing real teams, they needed the refs to bail them out. This is a game that you can win. You can win this game if you go up there and you play well and you play hard for four quarters. We haven't seen them do that all season. Can they do it? That's what worries me the most about this team. But with that said, let's get into our predictions here. Look, it's hard to pick Florida State to win any game, especially when you're talking about going on the road against a 5-1 team as an underdog. I said this on the Duke podcast. I think this is a game where, and shout out to the College Huddle. They got us that show there from another College Huddle partner there. So make sure you check them out. But what I said on that show was I think this game is going to be very close. I think this is going to be a game that could possibly come down to whoever has the ball last.
Yeah,
I think this could possibly even be an overtime game because I think you have two bad offenses and you have two pretty good defenses. I think Duke's defense is ahead of yours right now against a weaker slate of teams. And so who's going to be able to do that? Now, everything that I just said kind of makes you feel like you should err on the side of Duke. Duke has a bad offense, but they score more points than Florida State. Florida State's defense is not quite where Duke's is, but they played a harder slate of schedule. Same thing with the offense versus the defense here. It's going to be tough. You got to go on the road, and you got to do it at night in their place. Everything tells you to pick Duke in this game. But, man, I think 22-0 means something. I think there is that little bit of intimidation factor. I think that they're not going to be scared of Florida State, but Florida State's not going to be scared of them. With that being said, Michael, daggone it, Florida State, don't make me regret this. I'm going Florida State to win in a close one, 23-21. Give me the Noles. I'm going to be at this game, Florida State. If you don't win this game, I'm jumping on the field. I'm smacking every one of you. Go win this game. You talking about somebody jumping out getting a targeting penalty? It might be me, so stay tuned to your TV. I'll set the tone if they don't. Give me the Noles, 23-21.
Okay. Wow. Well, Jesse, I'll be honest with you, man. I came into this this episode just really believing. I told you before, and you know I'm a man of my word. I told you before, I will not pick the Noles to win again this year until I see that they can score more than 13 points, more than 14 points, more than 16 points, right?
Yeah.
And so I have not picked them since the Memphis game. I stopped picking them after. No, that's right. Memphis, I picked Memphis to win.
You did.
And I've not picked them. Obviously, I was wrong against Cal because I was at that game. I did not pick them against Clemson. I didn't pick them in the bye week because you lost the bye week with the recruiting. And I just came to this game thinking there's no way, no way, no way. But then, Jesse, you know, we both have careers outside of this. We love this because we love the Noles. So we do this basically for free. And, you know, I'm a pastor. And, you know, it's hard for me to pick anything with the word devil in it. I just can't do it.
I like it.
I just can't do it, Jesse. The Bible says that the thief of the night comes to kill, steal, and destroy. There ain't no way he's coming up against the Seminoles. Hallelujah. We are raining down fire and we are winning. I switched my pick and I got
Preach, Florida State my brother.
Winning. Preach, hallelujah. I got Florida State winning 23-20 on a walk-off field goal by Fitzgold himself. And we keep the streak intact.
I love it. Preach, my friend. I was actually going to say 23-21. You watch. Florida State will be down 21-20. And then Fitzgerald will get a walk-off field goal to win this game. So we're right on the same page, man. Yes. We're right on the same page. But, yeah, man, I think it's going to be close. And I really could see this going either way. I really could. But I think Florida State, man, I just think they can get it together this week with Brock Glenn at quarterback and come out and win. I'm excited, man. I hope this is the chance. I really do think this is going to set the tone for the second half of that season, right? I mean, you got Miami coming up after this. Right. It's going to be a tough ask for that team to go down there and win that game. But again, man, if you can go get some confidence and go win a road game at Duke, a 5-1 team, go beat them. I feel like that's going to give you some confidence to set you up for the rest of the season. If you beat Duke, you feel better about UNC. You feel better about Charleston Southern. We'll see where Florida's at. This is big for setting the tone for your second half of your season, man. So I'm excited to see this one go down. If they lose, man, I don't even want to talk about it. We're not losing. We're not doing it. That's right. We're going to get this one. So. With that being said, guys, that's our Duke preview for this week. A little bit of house cleaning here. I do want to touch on that there probably will not be a Friday show, which we normally record on Friday for our game day show. Probably won't be a Friday show because I'll be traveling up there. It's not a very long travel, but still it's about 3 hours. So I have to get up there and get ready for the game. Want to do a little bit of tailgating beforehand. But we are going to try and do a post-game show. Depends on my cell phone service, whether we can do it live right after the game from the stadium. We'll try and get that done for you guys. So make sure you stay tuned for that as well. If you think Florida State's going to get this one, drop it in the comments below. If you're watching on YouTube, let us know what you think. Will they get their second win of the season here? Again, man, I'm glad we're on Friday, too, because I'm ready to get home on Saturday. There's some good games on Saturday. You got Miami going to Louisville. That one's going to be interesting. You know, they travel with the refs there in their pocket, so we'll see how that one goes. You got Bama at Tennessee, who's going to lose it fast over there. You got Georgia at Texas. That's a really good one. I can't wait to watch that one. Yeah. And then you got Kentucky at Florida it's like watching a midget fight or something like that. to see them fight. So it's going to be interesting, man. But obviously, again, cannot wait to see Florida State play on Friday night. Going to be a fun one. Good weather for this game. But like I said, stay tuned for the post-game show. Any final thoughts before we get out of here, man?
No. What a way to end the show. No, it's great. Listen, Florida State, come on. We need this one. Give us some hope, right? We got the youth movement. We got Brock in. We got some good youth coming across and we got the players I think that can pull this out. So come on, Florida State. Let's get this done.
Let's do it. Friday night in Durham, 7:00, Noles versus the Blue Devils. And we'll catch you guys either, like I said, stay tuned for that post-game show. We'll get it to you either right after the game, or if we have to wait a little bit, we'll get you one way or the other. So with that being said, guys, like and subscribe on YouTube if you enjoyed this show. If you enjoy Michael's preaching, if you enjoy my stupid jokes, give us a like and subscribe. If you're on the podcast, rate and review. Tell a friend, tell a neighbor. We appreciate you guys spreading the word about Plant the Spear. So thanks so much for watching, guys. And as always, go Noles.
Go Noles. We'll